Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the 14th annual Danilo Husar-Struk Memorial Lecture. You know it's becoming an institution when the number no longer means anything. 14, it's a long time. And for 14 years, we've been running this event more or less successfully. And I am very grateful to you for coming out today to hear our talk, for braving this day when we remember more of Chernobyl than we do of Vinnytchenko, and braving the difficulties of even getting into this building. I was most fortunate that before you arrived, they actually put the doors back on the building, because when I arrived, for the last 3 days, the building didn't have its doors, right? They were working on those doors, and when you walked past them, no doubt your nose has told you that those doors had been recently worked on, and they don't actually work very well yet. Thank you for getting past that difficulty. This is an audience that I think doesn't need to be told who Danilo Husar-Struk was. We conduct these memorial lectures to memorialize a man who was a very significant and forceful presence in this department, that is, the Slavic department at the University of Toronto, and a man who was a very significant force in Ukrainian scholarship. He is, of course, best known for his work on the encyclopedia, but he was also a very avid fan of Ukrainian literature, and it is particularly in that role that we honor him in this lecture series. Today's lecture has a special meaning for us because we are welcoming the success of one of our own, so to speak. And at this point, I need to make a small apology. That is, I lied to you all when I said in the advertisement that Dr. Soroka's book would be on sale here. It was supposed to be on sale here. In fact, until about 5:40 this evening, I had every reason to believe that they were bringing the copies over for sale. However, McGill Queen's University Press didn't manage to get the books to Toronto. Why from Montreal to Toronto is so difficult, I don't know, but the books did not arrive. And so we celebrate Dr. Soroka's publication in absentia of the publication itself.
There is one book.
He will show you the one and only copy that he has with him, because he didn't bring more, anticipating that there would be an entire box full here. There is, however, I will hand them out momentarily, or get one from me before you leave, there is an order blank with information about the book. And while I have not received a promise from McGill University's press that they will honor the discount on that form, insist on it, because they should have had books here for sale. Scholarship is most successful when it produces results, and that's what we are most eager to celebrate today. Dr. Soroka has published a book on Volodymyr Vinnytchenko. This book, of course, grows out of his research. This is the work that he was working on as a doctoral student at the University of Alberta. This is the work that he continued at our university, in our department, in the years after his degree as a postdoctoral fellow here at the University of Toronto. And so we are delighted to welcome Dr. Soroka and to celebrate the publication of his book. And I ask him now to take over the floor. Dr. Sivan.
Дуже дякую. Thank you very much. Good evening. Добрий вечір. It is a great honor for me today It is a great honor for me today to present the 14th annual Danilo Husser-Struck Memorial Lecture. And I am grateful to Professor Maxim Tarnovsky for giving me such an opportunity. He was really my supervisor during my postdoctoral program here at the University of Alberta. And I must confess that in some way he contributed to the topic of my presentation. And the book, which I'm going to launch today to the Toronto community. I'm also thankful to the Struck family, to the friends of the family, and personally to Pani Oksana Pisaitska-Struck for supporting the fund and promoting the legacy and memory of Professor Struck. In the course of my work, I became familiar with a number of his excellent works. But I'm especially happy that I have the same scholarly interests as Professor Struck had in exploring the artistic world of the major Ukrainian writer Volodymyr Venichenko, particularly in his article Venichenko's Moral Laboratory, to which I refer in my book. Well, why Venichenko, and what does it mean to be a displaced writer? I chose Venichenko not for the reason that I like his writings. I do love his perfect stories, intriguing dramas, and sophisticated novels. But I chose Venichenko as a case study of an interesting literary and social phenomenon of being and writing between the homeland and the hostland in geographical displacement. How powerful could be writing from a distance has been proved by many historical examples, starting from the Roman poet Ovid to French emigres, American expatriates, and contemporary diasporic writers, not to mention Ukrainian men of letters, such as Evgen Malanyuk, Todosis Machka, Doki Agumenna, Ulas Samchuk, you name it. Mykola Gogol once confessed, about Russia I can only write in Rome. Or as Somerset Maugham noticed, one must live in a minimum of three countries in order to begin to understand one's own. The fact that Venichenko was one of the most popular Ukrainian writers and a leading politician only strengthened my interest in this topic. After all, Venichenko remains an important figure in the Ukrainian state and cultural canon. Venichenko's life and writings, in fact, were not deprived of attention during his lifetime and after his death in 1951. Since his works were prohibited in the Soviet Union until the late 1980s, it was the Ukrainian diaspora which promoted his works and study. Thanks, first of all, to the Venichenko Commission in the U.S., headed by Grigory Kostyuk and later by Larissa Onyshkevich, as well as to many other scholars, including Danilo Struck, Marko Pavlyshin, Andrew Kasperk, Taras Koznarski, to name just a few. Since Perebudova, Venichenko became a subject of numerous studies in Ukraine, including monographs by Volodymyr Panchenko, Helena Savachenko, and Valentina Kharkhun, who actually, if you remember, delivered the Struk lecture last year. However, as a displaced writer, Venichenko remained largely unnoticed. Scholars barely took into account that he lived most of his life and wrote the majority of his works outside his homeland. Overlooked is also the fact how different stages in Venichenko's development can be explained by displacement. In other words, this is what scholarship is about, to push boundaries and to discover something new and unexpected in what seems to be well known, in a way how Bogdan Rubchak interpreted Taras Shevchenko as an emigre poet. The next question: what is displacement? I believe that many of you may be familiar with this concept, which was applied to Ukrainian emigrants in post-war Europe. When I started the project, I confronted a methodological dilemma whether to use a more established concept, such as exile, emigre, or emigration, or one of more recent vintage, diaspora, travel, nomadism. My initial intention was to work within the traditional framework of exile studies. However, I was confused by the debate among scholars who tried to defend the exclusiveness of their approach. For instance, the Canadian scholar Hallard Daly classifies Henry James as an exile, whereas the British scholar Terry Eagleton sees him, as well as Joseph Conrad, as emigrants who chose English society from the outside. Some consider Conrad an exile and even a Polish writer. In going through this terminological jungle, I realized that this one concept approach would be insufficient to entirely capture the Ukrainian writer Venichenko. Among these terms, I found displacement the most relevant concept for my study, a blanket term that incorporates various experiences in relation to geographical place. Expatriation, travel, exile, nomadism, diaspora, they all represent various forms of a geographical move from the homeland, which may overlap or succeed each other and may depend on a number of factors, such as duration of displacement, a relationship with the homeland, level of adjustment to the hostland, as well as the age and personality of the writer. As a case study, I found the figure of Venichenko to be extremely fitting. Almost all of these aspects of displacement were interwoven through his writings, sometimes slightly pronounced, sometimes quite evident. As I see it today, my theoretical approach appeared quite productive. It allowed me to view Venichenko in many different perspectives and offered a new reading of his works. To analyze these dynamics of dynamics determined by being between the two shores, the homeland and the hostland, is actually the main focus of my today's presentation. Venichenko went into emigration twice. First time before World War I, from 1907 to 1914, and second time after the 1917 revolution, from 1920 to 1951. During his first displacement, his dominant face was that of the emigre. That is exemplified by his extensive involvement in the Ukrainian cultural and political discourse. Although the writer was away for 7 years to escape his imminent exile to Siberia, his homeland remained the main focus of his attention. And what is interesting that he became the most acclaimed Ukrainian writer at the time. His prominent contemporary Mykhailo Kotsubinsky wrote, "Whom do our people read? Venichenko. Whom do people talk about if it concerns literature? Venichenko. Whom do they buy? Again, Venichenko." Moreover, the Ukrainian writer was also highly acclaimed by imperial audiences, as his works were widely published in the Russian press and his plays were staged in many cities. Among the characteristics of his emigre face were his strong preoccupation, his strong national preoccupation, the tendency toward abstract ideas, a critical perspective on his country from a distance, and his provocative nature and manner of communicating with the public. The writer and politician felt a responsibility to his country, which was undergoing vital cultural, social, political, and moral changes. In a letter to Yevhen Chikalenko, who was his patron and literary godfather, wrote in 1908, "You can be sure, Yevhen Kharlampievich, that as long as I feel able, I will do my best to serve our national cause. By all ways and all means, we must keep up with the developed nations. This is a goal for which it is worth living and working." However, his active attitude toward his homeland can be explained not only by literary responses to his political repressions, but also as a form of gravitation toward familiar territory, which elicited the writer's artistic sensitivity. Significantly, about 36 out of 40 works written at this period were set in the homeland, and even in the remaining four, he says little about the local space and deals predominantly with the life of emigre compatriots. However, in time, this familiar territory becomes gradually more remote, and the writer tends increasingly to a more abstract world of ideas. That was a turning point in Venichenko's literary career. It was marked by a shift from realistic depiction of everyday life to philosophical reflections and intellectual analysis. He wrote again to Chikalenko. There was very rich correspondence between Venichenko and Chikalenko. "My entire misfortune is that I recollect life. I don't see it around me. I don't see real people, but my ideas are always with me. That is advantage of ideas over images." How did this change influence Venichenko's writings? Well, the perspective of distance, along with self-reflection and a strong ideological focus, were factors that allowed Venichenko to introduce fresh ideas into the burgeoning Ukrainian society of the early 20th century. He was one of the most popular and was one of the first writers who intrude into the so-called prohibited zones by addressing issues of love, sex, family relationship, prostitution, human instincts, and the corruption of revolutionary ideals. In this regard, I can name his numerous works, the novels Honesty with Oneself, and the Testament of Our Fathers, two most scandalous novels, maybe. His plays, The Lie and Bazaar, and a story about Yakim's house. Although Vinnichenko's radical modernist ideas were widely criticized as well, their provocative nature and freshness attracted intelligentsia readers with new horizons of expectation. Applying the broader perspective of displacement allowed me to view Vinnichenko not only as an emigre, but also as an expatriate, traveler, and exile. Expatriation and travel imply a lesser degree of displacement and more positive attitude. An expatriate may suffer alienation from a homeland country while enjoying advantages that displacement offers. Travel extends the notion of expatriation to emphasize on the exploration of new places, adventures, and exoticism. The travel of writers and artists to Europe is often described as a pilgrimage to a holy land and cultural cities as European cities as cultural meccas, where they could enjoy a bohemian way of life and atmosphere of international communication. Modernism was an aspect of a new culture, mobile, cosmopolitan, individualistic, urban, experimental, and provocative, that enticed so many young people. Forced to leave his homeland, the young and ambitious writer, Vinnichenko, succeeded in turning the predicament of his emigration into the pleasures of his expatriation and travel. One may argue that his physical presence in Europe significantly shaped his worldview and fostered his intellectual growth. He wrote to Chekalenko from Geneva in 1907. I'm also going to study theory and the history of world scholarship, philosophy, and literature. You know, I am an ignoramus, like the majority of our writers. That is perhaps why we cannot compete with Russian and European writers, though perhaps we do not have less talent. At this period, Vinnichenko enjoys sojourns in such places as Geneva, Zurich, Capri, Paris, Florence, and Lviv, where he mixed with writers, intellectuals, and revolutionaries. He studied foreign languages and read contemporary literature on the themes of heredity, morality, and love of nature, as well as works by contemporary influential writers. It was in Europe where his Marxist positivism was counterbalanced by his interest in irrational human drives, such as the strong Nietzschean individual and Bergson's idea of the stream of life. Also, losing touch with the social reality of his homeland, Vinnichenko turned increasingly to a world of art and beauty, a more abstract and ideal world, as reflected, for example, in his play The Black Panther and the Polar Bear, and a number of stories set in the hostland. In a few years after their return to Ukraine, Vinnichenko and his wife Rosalia would recollect those days in Europe as among the most wonderful episodes in their lives. Here's a citation from Vinnichenko's diary. "Sweet sadness, like a gentle sting, aches in my heart. I recollect that quiet and wonderful time of my stay in Italy, Paris, Switzerland, and Brittany. Why do I recollect it with such sweet pain and such deep longing? Why is my fondness for those days so deep merry and bright. When the war is over, Kocha and I, Kocha is a pet name of his wife, Rosalia, comes from a word Kochate. Kocha and I will go to Cavi di Livonia, Avon, and Brittany. We shall visit and walk around all those places that provoke the sunny and happy yearning full of love inside me. Despite the benefits of Vinnichenko's expatriation, he was quite reluctant to fully adjust to the hostland. This rupture with his homeland was accompanied by difficult social condition, a sense of isolation and uncertainty about his future, which led to nervous breakdowns and escapist thoughts. And here's one of those complaints to Chikalenko. Yevhen Harlampievich, I want to go to Ukraine. I'm bored here without life and people. I want to be active, to hear tears and to cry myself. But I can't simply look at beautiful foreign mountains and read books and nothing more. I am terribly tired of only watching how people live, work, and have their interests, and I can't even talk to them because the language is foreign and they and their interests are foreign to me. I can't stand the quiet. I don't like it. It's boring and annoying. Being pessimistic about his possible amnesty, Vinnichenko even considered going further away to Australia, India, a French colony, or even here, to North America. I even have a dream of settling in Canada and becoming a farmer, to dig a bit in the earth. It lures my peasant soul. So, all these options were open for Vinnichenko as they were open to another revolutionary from the same Social Democratic Party, who ended up in Canada as a prominent political and cultural activist. Guess who? No. He wasn't a member of the Social Democratic Party. Andrei Makuch is not here, actually, he might know. Prosho? Was he a member of that party? It's possible, but I mean Pavlo Krat. Actually, Pavlo Krat came from the Poltava region, and he actually followed this similar path as Vinnichenko. He went to Lviv and then traveled to Europe and escaped to Canada. So, very close paths.
Could have dug it in Ukraine.
Who? Oh, yes. Yeah, that was also another possibility. Or in Siberia. The novel Equilibrium, written in 1911, reflects Vinnichenko's thoughts on his status as an exile and also on the fate of those people who took part in the 1905-07 revolution and were forced into exile to escape Tsarist repressions. Exile is depicted as social condition that impacts revolutionaries in different ways. Stagnation, depression, squabbles, violence, crime, inebriation, and anarchy. The author implies that true revolutionaries, in order to sustain their identity, must return home to continue their revolutionary cause as the most positive protagonists do, and what Vinnichenko himself actually did in 1914. Paradoxically, nostalgia as a manifestation of Vinnichenko's exile can be also found among Vinnichenko's writings on revolutionary exile and artistic themes. And it served its purpose to sustain writer's identity exposed to a sudden rupture with his native environment. Among the aesthetic modalities of his nostalgic mood were lyrical prologues and passages, landscapes, climate descriptions, childhood memories, and so-called hyper-realistic details. This perspective of nostalgia also gave me a clue to apply the same framework to his children's stories. Fedko, the troublemaker, and a funny scene with Kostya, with their return to the golden age of his childhood. But what if a writer would stay longer, or even permanently, outside his country? To show how displacement works and evolves through time, it was important to analyze Venechenko's second emigration from 1920 to 1951. Venechenko's writings at this period, under new historical circumstances and different personal dilemmas, were marked by inclinations toward utopianism, nomadism, and universalism. In contrast to his first displacement, Venechenko immediately made efforts to adjust to the hostland. He stayed briefly in Czechoslovakia for several years in Germany, and for the rest of his life in France. In Weimar Germany, with its flourishing cultural life at that time, Venechenko plunged into the world of literature, art, and philosophy by reading, attending exhibitions, plays, and cinemas, as well as attempting to attract a broad European audience with his works. And his efforts actually resulted in the successful promotion of his plays, The Lie, and The Black Panther and The Polar Bear, and which actually appeared in many European countries. It's over about a few hundred times. There is statistics. And a great fan of film, Venechenko also worked on a number of film scripts. And in 1921, his play The Black Panther was made into a German film. There is a reference to that film here. Paradoxically, Venechenko's recognition in Europe led him to bigger inner tension and a search for new meaning in life. He was increasingly caught between his national and social preoccupation. His attitude toward the diaspora and the Bolsheviks, and his commitments toward politics and literature, between the real practice of building socialism in the Soviet Union and its radical divergence from the communist ideal, and between the high expectations of a world revolution and the sober reality of increasing totalitarianism. This sense of historical determinism and a belief in the progressive movement toward a classless communist society explain Venechenko's high expectations for the future. He jotted in his diary, "I sense some kind of emptiness in experiencing the world. Everything is unreal and temporary." All these vacillations were evidenced by his desire to embrace the whole world on the one hand and to escape from this world on the other hand. Venechenko's optimism alternated with his apathy, loneliness, boredom, and escapist ideas. This is what he wrote again. "I passionately wish to crawl somewhere into a crack on the planet and pretend that I am a small insect, dead, and to live like that for at least 2 years, and not be afraid of the Moloch of society, not sacrifice my will, work, and existence to it." His plans included leaving Europe for South America, Africa, or a remote island. feeling uprooted, Vinnichenko was actually on the brink of losing his identity, if I may say so. Somebody else, instead of me, is looking at me and is sadly astonished. Why are you here in a small German village, in a German house, which you for some reason call your own? What drove and stuck you here in this corner of a foreign land, like a wet autumn leaf? I am surprised, but it seems to me that after 23 years of life in the form of a fall leaf, I should have already learned and become accustomed to sticking to foreign corners of my native planet. Sorry for so long quotations. I would like let Vinnichenko actually to speak, so you will feel that situation. This fragile emotional state even resulted in suicidal thoughts as a response to Vinnichenko's existential crisis. The writer's uprootedness is best revealed in his three-volume utopian novel, The Solar Machine, Сонячна машина, one of the most popular and innovative works in Ukrainian literature of the 1920s, which also signal a cardinal shift in Vinnichenko's thematic and stylistic interests. Although it was traditionally seen as a form of ideological debate with the Soviet counterpart, my study offers a new reading of this novel through which Vinnichenko channeled his escapist impulses, alleviating his anxiety and uncertainty about his present by projecting a better future. Whereas his children's stories reflect his nostalgia for the past, his utopia reflects what is called future-oriented nostalgia. The novel Сонячна машина, while a tremendous success in Ukraine, was not in particularly noticed or published in the West, due in part to a different horizon of expectation. The recent success of utopian writings had by that time been challenged by anti-utopias such as We by Yevgeny Zamyatin and Brave New World by Aldous Huxley. The reaction of displaced writers who stay outside their homelands for a considerable period of time generally ranges between two extremes, isolationism and universalism. According to Bogdan Rubchak, for writers who belong to the first group, writing becomes either a vehicle for memories and hopes or a totally enclosed, self-enclosed shell. Thomas Mann speaks about another personally experienced extreme when displacement is no longer a condition of waiting or an ultimate return, but rather it hints of the dissolution of the nations and the unification of the world. Vinnichenko's utopia actually signifies his shift to this unification and reorientation toward a broader international cultural space. The writer adopts a kind of world citizenship through his references to my planet, my globe, and my earth. He writes in his diary, "Anyway, it is a fact that life exists in the homeland, and it goes on completely without us emigrants. And what I write, what I think, and what I've done, said..." Oh, I'm sorry. This is... Okay, that quotation is missing for some reason, I don't know. So I'll write it down from my note here. Speaking about Vinnichenko's sense of world citizenship, the idea of terrestrial citizenship is becoming more and more real. It is unlikely that I will ever see Ukraine again. the feeling of regional patriotism must grow and develop into a patriotism of the planet. I'm also not allowed to take part in everyday political life. This means that the political must also develop into a broader activity, into work for the happiness of mankind. This perspective of universalism helped me to challenge the metropolitan view of Venechenko as intrinsically Ukraine-centered, as claimed, for example, by Solomia Pavlichko. After his move to France in 1925, he made immediate efforts to get in step with the contemporary French theater by producing The Big Secret, a play that contains elements of farce and surrealism. His next social detective novel, The Deposits of Gold, was intended to a broad international audience with its message of love, peace, and spiritual rejuvenation after the turbulence of World War I and revolutionary upheavals. Venechenko's pacifism in this novel dovetails with the pacifist trend of the day, which was largely manifested by European leftist intellectuals and artists in the 1920s and 30s. At the same time, The Deposits of Gold negotiates emigre and exilic features, responding to the Soviet government's policy of indigenization and economic liberalization. Once persona non grata, Venechenko, for a short time, considered his reconciliation with the Bolsheviks and supported the return movement by writing his brochure, The Return to Ukraine. However, he himself hesitated, as did the main protagonist of the novel, Mykola Ternichenko. Sounds almost like Venechenko. The hero, as a true citizen of the world, found better conditions for his idealistic projects in the host land. Although Venechenko continued to follow developments in the Soviet Union, it was insufficient for his writer's sensibility. He began experiencing difficulties with understanding the changes in the political, social, and cultural life of his homeland, which inevitably engendered a psychological feeling of otherness and alienation. And he writes in his diary, this is this quotation, "Anyway, it is a fact that life exists in the homeland, and it goes on completely without us emigrants. And what I write, what I think, what I've done, said, and will say, is not interesting to anyone over there. And one should accept this and take this into account and live as though you are without a homeland and citizenship, and be lonely on the planet together with Kocha." Despite his literary success in Ukraine, Venechenko was increasingly perceived as a writer of the old generation who was out of step with post-revolutionary reality. And when the play The People's Malachi by Mykola Kulish appeared in 1927, it seemed almost like a critical, ironic response to Venechenko's efforts to reform a man. His alienation grew when his recently published works, such as The Solar Machine, The Song of Israel, and Nod, were strenuously criticized by the party, while the young poet Oleksa Vlasko satirized Venechenko as a petit bourgeois who loves sausages and caviar, in contrast to the Soviet people who love labor. Moreover, Venechenko's other works, such as Deposits of Gold, The Prophet, and Happiness, were rejected by censors. And as of 1932, all his works were proscribed in the Soviet Union. Equally, in the interwar period, Venechenko felt alienated from European realities. As a true Marxist, he continued to believe in the decline of capitalism and the ultimate advent of a classless communist society. Once he had dreamed of making his Paris house into a cultural hub of the world. Now he had become more irritated by its hectic and noisy life. The writer sought out tranquility and isolation through long trips to southern France, at a nudist island near Paris, and by practicing vegetarianism and a simple way of life. For some time, he became interested in Eastern philosophy, addressing issues of self-development, inner harmony, and auto-suggestion. His intense preoccupation with painting and the spirit can be also seen as a manifestation of his loneliness and a form of escape. Art critics such as Bohdan Pevny and Sviatoslav Hordynsky noted the absence of a didactic tone in his paintings and a preference for local landscapes. There is one. Another one. We have Pani Natalia who can comment on the quality, but I found those paintings. This is an autumn and we have winter, so he tried himself in different themes, so to speak. Landscapes, as I mentioned, nature morts and portraits. This is his self-portrait and a beautiful portrait of his wife. All those portraits reminded more of Vinichenko as an ideologist of the petite bourgeoisie than an ideologically engaged writer. And only one painting, Ukrainian Landscape, is devoted to his homeland. Vinichenko's move to Muzhen in 1934 transformed him into a virtual hermit, isolated from the outside world while actively meditating on its development. Symbolically, he compares his house in Muzhen, I believe that Pani Oksana can recognize that house which she visited. So he compares this house to a monastery and calls it an isolated prison with hard labor. This is his painting of his house. After a series of events, current events such as the economic depression, an ongoing political crisis in Europe, and intensifying terror in the USSR, Vinichenko became largely disillusioned with the contemporary world, which resembled him a huge colony of lepers. And whereas earlier Vinichenko attacked mainly the bourgeoisie as a class of exploiters, now he concludes that all of mankind is clearly sick with as he put it, millenarian and chronic illness, and that revolutions are only attempts to heal it through surgery. No social revolution could alter the world without inner change that would regenerate individuals to live in harmony with each other and nature. So to implement his ideas, Vinichenko undertook a revision of Marxism and elaborated his own philosophical system called Concordism, which was systematically developed in his two treatises, Happiness and Concordism. Oh, okay. one quotation is missing here again. Concordism, as Vinnichenko put it, is the system of healing and reorganization of human body energy, both physical and psychological, which is based on balancing and agreement of that energy. It proposed Bible-like concordist commandments such as be a simple part of nature, be honest with yourself, live only with the fruits of your labor, and even a hedonistic one, make love with whomever it is pleasant to do so. According to Eugen Lashik, concordism can be considered the first morality, the first theory of morality from the Marxist point of view, which proposes an ideal world society, democratic, egalitarian, and classless. However, Ovchinenko's attempts to spread his teaching was not met with much interest and failed due to rather utopian and doctrinaire character. Cut off from developments in Soviet Ukrainian literature, Vinnichenko also tried to integrate himself in the Holstein discourse. With his two novels, The Internal Imperative and The Leprosarium, he took part in international literary competitions, hoping to represent France with his original ideas. He actively began arranging for translations of his works, and for many of them he deliberately chose foreign setting, addressing issues of international significance, such as intense ideological struggles, totalitarian tendencies, international espionage, the destabilizing role of European communist parties ruled from Moscow, the complex relationship among social classes and moral decline. Neither of his works, however, was printed at that time. And despite all his efforts, Vinnichenko's voice was barely heard in the situation of political reaction that existed in Europe in the 1930s and 40s. The final stage of Vinnichenko's displacement from 1941 to 1951 can be properly analyzed through the concept of late homecoming, which is based on autobiographical memory and accompanied by a spontaneous and intensive retrieval of objects and events of the past. By the end of Vinnichenko's life, autobiographical memory had become an important factor in his writing, namely in his two post-war novels, The New Commandment and Take the Floor, Stalin. Vinnichenko's experience of homecoming was intensified definitely by World War II, post-war developments, and a new wave of Ukrainian emigration, which inspired the writer's creativity and provided institutional support for his writings. The war even sparked hope that the Soviet Union would undergo liberalization and he might return home. What a naivety. His universalist stance, however, does not disappear, but is intricately integrated into his new sense of longing for his homeland. Both novels were written in the form of a political and adventure novel, which was typical of this period. Vinnichenko's denunciation of communist practice was primarily linked to his efforts to build world peace through his idea of collectocratism. A Marxist-based doctrine, it proposes to transfer the means of production from private to cooperative ownership, thereby eradicating grounds for conflicts at the domestic and international levels. Preoccupied with his international mission, Vinnychenko reveals little of his homecoming in the new commandment. Take the flaw Stalin has the same universalist appeal, but on the other hand, it served as a form of that late homecoming for the aged author who was not able to physically return home for his last 30 years and whose work of memory was strongly imbued with nostalgia. The lyrical mode is key to understanding this novel as a text of displacement with strong exilic underpinnings. The main protagonist, Stepan Ivanenko, comes to Ukraine after a 15-year absence, disguised as a journalist who conducts a survey about the situation in his homeland. The elements of homecoming includes observing local landscapes, high emotionality, shedding tears, singing, referring to the youth years, and spontaneous recollections. Here is actually the first episode when Ivanenko enters Ukraine on a train. When the little white houses, white, clean, dear, and ancient, first appeared among the landscapes, Ivanenko suddenly became quiet, as though gloom had overcome him, and several times he didn't even hear what his female companion was saying. In some bewilderment, she glanced at him sidelong and eventually stopped talking to him. He sat there silently and continued to gaze at the pictures of the film unfolding outside the train car's window. Finally, smiling crookedly, he began talking in a quiet, even, and practically lifeless voice, either to Zabolotova or himself. Ukraine. Zabolotova turned her face to him, and he spoke right into her big, open eyes. 15 years I haven't seen it. But he didn't add that his heart sank so strangely inside him, and that waves of such an extraordinary feeling were passing through his body that he wanted to turn away and close his eyes where tears were beginning to gather. The most vivid manifestation of Vinnychenko's late homecoming was a transformation of negative connotations, particularly negative odors, into positive associations. The writer refers to stiflingly rotten and foul and horse manure in wheel tracks, which evoke positive emotions in this context and remind us of Homer's famous phrase, "In our homeland, even smoke is sweet and dear to us." To sum up, Vinnychenko's case reveals a complex and multifaceted picture of being and writing between the homeland and the hostland, that is, in geographical displacement. We cannot pin him down to a single category, be it emigre, expatriate, traveler, exile, or nomad. But see how these categories overlap or succeed each other, reflecting the evolution of the writer's identity. My long-term intention was to present this, as I believe, well-structured framework that would be applicable to study any displaced writer with his or her unique experience. I should confess that exploring this topic and writing this book it was a personal journey to me as well. And when I came to Canada to pursue my doctoral program without clear intention to stay, analyzing these various aspects of displacement allow me to better understand challenges it brings. And this is actually one of my trips to former Vinnychenko's estate, that building, there is the picture inside. The house was built in the end of the 18th century. So I believe that Roman's house is the oldest. But now I see that Vinichenko's house was even older. And actually, current owner, Alan McHugh, a former businessman, he sees this estate as a pilgrimage place because from time to time, people from Ukraine are interested in attending this place, and he knows a lot about Vinichenko. Actually, he asked me to send him his book, and maybe he would promote it through some town council. I don't know. I should talk to him. But do you have any plans to travel to Mužen? So you know the place, and I know the address, and you can find that place. He actually was ready to sell that house for, if I'm not mistaken, for 5 million euro. So if there are any oligarchs to buy that place, in a unique place, close to Khan, so it's a really nice place. Professor Danilo Husser-Struk was on a mission to promote Ukrainian literature in Western academia and the English-speaking world. And this is what I did myself. I hope that this first English language monograph on the major Ukrainian writer, Vladimir Vinichenko, would be my best contribution to his legacy and memory. Thank you. Дуже дякую.